and welcome to Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and just so very glad to be here with you this evening. It's Tuesday. The week is off to a great start. At least I hope that yours is, and mine certainly is. And so we are just rocking and rolling. Finally got some sunshine today after about 4 or 5 days of just rain off and on. It was so dreary, just pretty much all of last week and through the weekend. So it was nice to finally wake up the sunshine and gosh, warmer temperatures today. I think spring has finally returned. So anyway, I'm hoping that your week is going well and you are doing well. And tonight we have an exceptional guest with us. I'm still just in disbelief that we actually have her with us. And we're actually going to be giving her a call in just a moment. We are so excited to have our guest with us. And if you follow our show, you know that tonight our guest is Adrienne Barbeau, and I want to give you a little background on her. She is a best-selling author, a recording artist, and the star of numerous features, films for television, concert performances, musicals, and plays. Movie fans know her best for her performances in The Fog, Escape from New York, Creep Show, Swamp Thing, Back to School, and Cannonball Run. She has a Golden Globe nomination and over 450 screen performances to her credit. Wow. Drew Carey fans know her as Oswald's mom. She starred as Ruthie the Snake Dancer on ABC's fascinating series Carnival. Her recent appearances include Grey's Anatomy and Dexter and on ABC's General Hospital. She also portrayed Victoria Grayson, which is played by Madeline Stowe, her mother, on ABC's hit series Revenge and is most recently known for her role in critically acclaimed hit blockbuster film Argo, which was directed and starring Ben Affleck. And so tonight we are very, very happy to welcome Adrienne Barbeau, and I'm going to try to get her on the line now. She called me right as we were about to go live, so I'm going to see if we can get her now. She was having some phone issues earlier today, and she called to tell me they were all cleared up. So we're dialing now.
Hello.
Hello, Adrienne. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you.
This is Dolly. It is so good to hear from you, and I am so happy that modern technology, you know, it is just one of those things that I think is our the bane of our existence sometimes.
Sometimes it is. This was one of them, but I think we've got it all straightened out.
Well, it is an honor and a privilege to have you with us this evening. Thank you so much for being here. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, all I can say is, wow, where to begin? I mean, you have such a stellar career, and I want to personally congratulate you on your outstanding career success because, you know, what you have managed to accomplish over the bulk of your career is just no small feat, and it's quite impressive.
Well, I just keep going on. <You know? laughs> I love what I do, so that makes it easy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's half the battle won when we're doing what we love. You know, we never feel like we're working a day in our life. Isn't that what they say?
Exactly, exactly.
So very true. Well, as you look back over your career, how does all this success feel to you? I mean, because you've done a lot of major things, and you've accomplished so much. So, does your head feel like it's spinning at times or throughout your career? Has it felt that way, or have you just kind of learned to take it all in stride?
You know, Dawn, I always just think of it as this is what I do for a living, and I've managed to make a living at it and you know, support the family and pay the bills, and I don't think that I do see it the way other people see it. It's been my job, you know, and it's been a fantastic job and continues to be. And so, I don't know. I mean, I would be disingenuous if I didn't say yes. I can look back and say, oh gosh, you know, I was the original Rizzo on Broadway, which is not too many people know, but you know, that was something to be that I'm proud of, and I've had some fantastic opportunities, done some wonderful shows, you know, that were wonderful, not because of me, but I had a chance to be associated with them. And so, I don't know, I think anybody in my industry who manages to just, you know, put bread on the table is way ahead of the game, because it's not an easy business, and it's not an easy business to stay employed in.
Yeah, for sure. Especially nowadays, you know, it's changed so much.
Yes.
Now I want to back up a little bit, because I have to ask you, what appealed to you about acting and drew you to it, you know, as a young girl fresh out of high school and starting life on your own? I mean, how did this all kind of come into play for you?
Well, I think part of it was probably my mother, who was very supportive and, you know, started me taking ballet lessons when I was 3. And then when I think I was in 5th grade, someone said to her, oh, you know, Adrienne has a nice voice. And so she started me taking singing lessons, and just sort of progressed from there. I ended up doing community theater in the town in which I lived. And in those days, I mean, I didn't have anybody. There was no one in our family who had ever been in the business, and I don't think I ever even considered that it would be a career. I was thinking, I'll go to college and get my teaching credential, and maybe I'll teach acting, because I do sort of seem to know how to do that, you know. And I ended up, one of the productions that I did with the community theater that I was involved in, well, first of all, when we, right out of high school, the company that I was working with, the community theater company, had a musical comedy review, and I was part of it, and we were selected by the State Department to go overseas and entertain the armed forces. So that was really sort of my first paying job. I think we got $7 a day or something.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, for an 18-year-old who'd never even been on an airplane, I mean, to go to, we were right on the DMZ. They were shooting our troops while we were performing.
Wow.
And we were in Japan and Korea and Okinawa and everything. I came back and started college, and then I did another production, and in the production was an actress who had been in New York, and she had been in an off-Broadway play, a musical. And she said, you know, everybody talks about getting ready to go to New York, but you really should just go to New York, because that's where all the good teachers are. And I thought, well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. I just packed my bags and told my mother to, you know, when I had an address, she could ship them to me. And I moved to New York. I didn't know anything about television or film or anything like that. I hadn't grown up going to the movies, and we didn't have a TV.
I'm on an interview, honey. I can't talk.
Sorry, my sons just came home from school. All I knew was live theater and musical comedy. So I went to New York and started auditioning and taking classes. And then my first Broadway show was Fiddler on the Roof. I played one of the daughters. And then I was hired for a new Broadway show that, you know, was just starting. Nobody had ever heard of it. We were the first cast, and that was Grease. And I was I played the role of Rizzo. And that led to a Tony nomination, which led to Norman Lear coming to New York to audition me for Maude. And Maude led to everything else.
Oh, wow. I mean, you have such an amazing story. Just what I've learned about you and known about you through the years and following you, because I have to share a little story with you. I first became a fan of yours when I saw you in The Fog. Now, there's a backstory to this. My mother, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, you didn't watch TV, you didn't have a TV when you were growing up. Well, my mother was never big on allowing me and my brother to watch a lot of horror flicks. So I recall I was babysitting, and the movie came on television. It had already been in the theater, so it was on television. And I tuned in because I thought, I want to see this movie. Because, you know, there was a sense about that of I'm babysitting, I'm not at home, I'm getting away with something, you know. And it was the first horror film I ever saw. And probably not, for my first horror film, probably not the one I should have watched while I was alone at night babysitting kids that had already been put to bed. And I was there by myself watching this movie. But I was so enthralled, you know, and I was just so blown away by your acting because it was so, and as young as I was then, I really didn't know anything about any of that stuff, but it just was so believable. And all I could think was, get him, you know, it was just, I was so drawn in, and I thought, wow, horror movies are kind of cool. So, yeah, I mean, that was where I first came to know you as an actress, and you know, and from there, you know, I followed your career and that they saw a lot of things that you were in and just continued to be a fan because everything I ever saw you do was just wonderful and loved it. So yeah, so there you have it. There's my story.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a good thing you didn't watch Halloween that night.
No, really.
About the babysitters.
I would have been scarred for life. Now, mind you,
you might never have watched another one, yes. Or you may never have made another, you may never have had another babysitting job.
That's very true. Well, the kiddos, I would have never watched it. The kiddos were up. But it was, you know, and it's interesting because I remember some years later, you know, when they did the remake of The Fog, and I saw that movie, and I just remember thinking, oh, my gosh, the remake was nowhere, it didn't even come close to the original. And you just played it so well, and it was just so wonderfully done. And oh my gosh, it was a great movie. It's probably, I don't know if it's because it's my first horror film that I ever saw, but to this day it remains my favorite. I enjoyed others as time progressed, but that still remains my favorite of all of them. So I still watch it occasionally, and you know when I can. But yeah, it's a great movie. So
well, thank you.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, now you've done, you know, you've had starring roles in theater and film and television, and what aspect of acting have you found that you've enjoyed the most?
Someone asked me that just the other day, and I was like, you know, it really depends. It starts with the role, that you know, a wonderful role in a stage production is more desirable than a mediocre role in a film or something. But I like working in film. I like working in short increments, up close, you know, on camera. I also, just as a mother who gets up at, you know, 6 or 6:30 every morning, doing stage at night is sort of like, oh gosh, I gotta get my energy up, and it's always sort of like looming over my head as the day goes on because I don't want to walk on stage and not have what I need, you know. So there's a part of me that just loves waking up really early and going, and I don't even mind sitting in a trailer for 4 hours waiting for a 30-second piece of film. But it really comes down to whatever the project is. One of my favorites, I mean, I love doing Grease. I love doing Fiddler. I just went back and did and played Golda, played Mama in Fiddler just last summer. And I love, because I love that show so much. But one of my favorite jobs, I think, was Carnival for HBO, which had... I mean, I love the character. It was a wonderful group of people to work with. I thought the material was just fascinating and really well executed. And it also gave me time to be with my children because there were so many of us in the cast that, you know, most of us worked maybe 4 days out of 6 or 7. And so that was the ideal job if you're going to have a family and be an actor, you know. The real ideal job for a mom is a sitcom because it's basically sort of a 8 to 5, 4 days a week, and then one long day when you're filming. But I don't like, that's probably my least favorite format is half-hour sitcom. Maybe because so many of them don't seemed very funny to me, and I was fortunate enough to be in one that, that really was, you know. But but I like it all. I love. I've been doing video games, and I love doing video games, and I love doing voiceovers because I don't have to put on makeup and I don't have to get my hair fixed. So they all have something to offer, you know.
I'm sure. I'm sure there's something from everyone, you know, that has its highlights, you know, and its pros and cons, so to speak. And, you know, and one of the things, I mean, you've done a lot of television. I mean, you mentioned the sitcom, but, you, I mean, you know, you were in Eight is Enough, The Love Boat. I mean, it goes on and on. It's just so, all these shows, I feel like, you know, I take a walk down memory lane when I look back on all the shows that you've actually been in, but the one that really I think people came to know you the most on television was Mob. And, wow, I mean, it, you know, you were around some of the biggest and best in the show business, you know, on that show, the author, Conrad Bain, Rue McClanahan, I mean, all of which, you know, who are no longer with us. And what was it like working with such legends in television?
It was fantastic. And I don't want to say unfortunately, but as it happened, I took it all for granted at the time because I had never done television. I'd never, you know, I'd never even been in L.A. I'd never done a sitcom or anything. All I had ever done was stage, and we all came from the stage. And so it was a very, I mean, it was just a great group of people. I mean, they truly were my family. Bill Macy is still with us. I just ran into Bill at the grocery store the other day.
Oh, wow.
And Conrad was one of my, I mean, he was my mentor. He was my surrogate father. We just lost him, and that was a real, I mean, it was sorrowful to lose all of them. But I didn't realize until years later when I went off to do other half-hour sitcoms and even other television shows how incredibly fortunate I was to work with those people at that time, because you know, there were a lot of other shows where the people weren't as professional or, you know, didn't care enough about the material and weren't as giving as actors. B was one of the most giving actors I've ever worked with. She was the first one who would say, you know, this joke would be funnier if Conrad were saying it or if Adrienne were saying it. Or she just wanted the material to be the very best it could. And she was the first one in the rehearsal hall and the last one to leave. She knew her lines before any of the rest of us. And they were all really wonderful people to be. We were a family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean,
so
what a blessing to have worked with, you know, with the likes of people as that. I mean, such as that. I mean, Bea Arthur, to me, you know, on screen, she always had this presence about her. But it was such that you just felt like off screen, you would get the same kind of personality. You know, she would be very forthright, very direct, and, you know, you knew where you stood. I mean, I just felt like in real life, that was how she was, too. Was that,
yes,
in fact, the way she was?
She wasn't as vociferous, and she wasn't as, you know, politically active, I guess I should say. She carried, what B was really a homebody whose life revolved around her boys and her dogs, and she loved to cook, and, you know, she wasn't out socializing all the time, and she wasn't out burning bras or any of those things that everybody was doing in those days. But if she didn't suffer fools either. I mean, if something wasn't right or she didn't like what somebody was doing, she let you know.
Oh, yeah.
But she was, in my mind at least, she was much softer than Maude. I mean, she wasn't as vocal, let's say.
Well, you know, you definitely had such a rare opportunity to be, you know, in the presence of those folks and to work with them and to learn from them. I mean, gosh, what a great way to kind of get your foot, you know, your feet wet in the world of television, to be honest.
Yes,
show.
Yes.
You know,
and there have been so many times since then when I've, you know, been on stage or been filming something when I've delivered a line and I thought, oh, my heavens, that's B coming out of my mouth, you know, because she had the most impeccable, I mean, she had incredible comic timing, and I learned it from her, you know, I learned from the best.
Well, you know, this is something I'm very curious about, because throughout your career, you know, I'm sure you've seen and experienced many changes in the industry, and in your opinion, what do you consider to be some of the biggest changes that have taken place through the years, in television in particular?
Well, two things come to mind. The first is the rise of the, well, it began with People magazine, I guess, but the rise of the celebrity, you know, the celebrity media, I guess you'd call it, the Us magazine and Star magazine or whatever they're called. I don't even know, Now and Shout and all of those things, which give rise to careers that are based on celebrity and notoriety and you know, visibility as opposed to talent. That's one. And then, of course, reality programming. I mean, cable, of course, has had a huge impact. I would like to think for the better, because we just have so much more to choose from, and some of the cable stations are really doing remarkable work that you couldn't even do on film. But reality programming is, yeah, it's sort of changed everything.
It has. And you know, and I'm such a nostalgic TV buff. I mean, I miss that era of Maude and Love Boat and It Is Enough and all those shows that you were in and more. I mean, it was such a good era of good variety programming. And it was entertaining, and people loved it. And I really, I hate to say it, but reality TV has kind of killed in a way the traditional TV that we, you know, people like myself grew up with. And it is sad because, you know, it's like almost nowadays, there are some people who can't get enough of that reality thing. But to me, it's the farthest thing from reality out there.
<You know? laughs> I think you're right.
I would rather watch
knowing what goes on behind the
exactly. I mean, I would rather watch a sitcom that is, you know, has the Maude persona and the whole makeup and Golden Girls and things like that. That, I mean, you can catch a lot of these things on, you know, TV Land and some of your cable rerun shows, but it's not the same as having something that is current, you know, out there to, you know, but it seems like there's a couple different genres that make up television now. Cable still kind of does their own thing, and that's kind of, I think, helped. But, you know, the major networks, they've kind of resigned themselves to a couple different platforms that seem to work for them, but it's kind of so repetitious that it's really hard for me to watch television now. It really is. And, you know, it just because of the way it has changed, you know, so dramatically.
Yes.
And it is sad in a way because it's, I think a lot of great actors and actresses that, you know, really could do justice to some really good programming like we used to have, you know, are not getting those opportunities now because you're pulling, you know, Joe and Wendy off the street to do a reality show, and it's just not the same, you know. So everyday people are being made celebrities and getting that notoriety.
Yes.
That in days of Maude and Love Boat, you had to really be somebody in the business and already have made it to be on a show, on a major television show. I mean, you really had to work your way to get there. And there was no instant celebrity like it is now. And I think it has definitely taken a lot away from, you know, the traditions of television and what television was meant to be to begin with, which was the greatest entertainment value you could have, you know, aside from the movies. So it's really sad in a way, you know. Exciting in some ways, but not so much in others, you know.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Now, I want to shift gears a little bit because I read that your role on General Hospital, and we have a lot of General Hospital fans that are our listeners, that was your first foray in daytime television. So talk
it was.
Well, you know, and I saw you on there, and you did a great job, as always. I mean, I've never seen you do anything bad. You're such a phenomenal actress. But I'm curious, you know, talk a little bit about how working in that role was different from doing, like, primetime television. Because, you know, I've heard that daytime can be a lot more rigorous than, you know, primetime, you know, television can be.
Well, I mean, the first major difference is that there is no rehearsal. You get your words maybe the night before. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while since I did it. Maybe you get a day or two before, and show up, get hair and makeup on, walk on the set, and you have a blocking rehearsal so that the camera operators will know where you're going to be when you say which line, if you happen to say the right line. But that's it. There's no finding things or, you know, you really got to be able to work fast and on your feet and ad lib or improvise, because every actor had a different technique for, you know, accomplishing their role. Some were word perfect. Some went way afield from the written word, which made it difficult, you know, because you weren't always sure if that was your cue, since it wasn't anything you heard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one difference. The other difference, which I didn't realize until I'd been doing, I did the show for about 9 months, is that, you know, when you take a, certainly when you take a feature script, or even a pilot for a television script, you pretty much know the character because the movie has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So you know who the character is and how she might, or you make your decisions about who she is and how she might respond in this situation or that situation. But with a soap opera, that character just goes on, and you know, even Suzanne, the character that I played, started out as, you know, a mentor and a helpmate, and I was only supposed to be there for a short period of time, and then they liked the character, so they kept writing her, which was wonderful for me. But in the end, she turned out to be a murderer and a kidnapper and all of those things. And it was very bizarre because I had to go back as we were getting deeper into the negativity of the character. I had to go back and think about everything that I had done up until then to see how do I justify what I'm doing now, given what I did then, or how do I justify what I did then, at least in my mind, so that I can take it in this different direction. So that was interesting. And I'm very literal, so it was a challenge for me to, well, why would I do that now when I did something 3 months ago that is the exact opposite? I had to come up with, you know, a good reason.
Oh, yeah.
So those were the two things that I found unique to the art form, which, if you think about it, it really is the only American art form that we have in film and television media. I mean, it is a true American art form, the soap opera.
Oh, yeah. And it's you know, I used to think it was timeless, but, you know, as we started losing some of them, and now a couple of them have come back to the internet, you know, it's interesting how the wave of the internet has made so many things possible. And, I mean, who would have ever, well, first of all, it would have been, you know, as I was growing up, and it being such a generational thing in my household to watch with my mom and my grandmother, as so many people attest to, you know, it was unthinkable to think that, I mean, if everything else went away on television, you just felt like the daytime drama would always be there because it had always been there. And then as we started to lose them one by one, as in a domino effect almost, it was really interesting how that happened. And then, you know, the fans kind of got behind and brought two of them back. So it's been really interesting to see how it's kind of all played out over time, and especially in recent years when it's had such a hit economically, as opposed to what it had in the past. So, it's very interesting. But, yes, I mean, because it is the one American born and driven, you know, art form, it's all the more reason why we hate to lose it, you know.
Yes.
we see there are many things that try to replace it, but not, are nowhere near as successful. So it's, you know, it's quite interesting. Now, I would be very remiss if I did not talk about Argo, because, you know, that was a hit blockbuster movie that you were in, and oh my gosh, it scored over 136 million at the box office. And why do you think the movie did so well?
I think it was a great script. A great story, but a great script and a great director who managed to take material where everyone knew how it was going to turn out and yet keep them, you know, just glued to the screen and on the edge of their seats, rooting for the ending that they all knew was coming. But, from the moment I read it, I just thought, oh my God, this is going to be fantastic if it's done right. And Ben took a great script and made it even more, you know, I mean, brilliant.
Well,
and so I think that's why.
Yeah, and I've always been curious, you know, if the fact that it did so well, because Ben has been on the opposite side of the camera. He's been in front of the camera, and so to get behind the camera and direct, I mean, he was also in it, but, you know, to think, you know, he was able to take kind of perspective from many different sides, you know, from what the viewer would see or what they would expect to, you know, what the actors would expect. I mean, it was very interesting how he was able to do that so beautifully. You know, it was so beautifully done, and, oh, it just, you know, it just turned out so great. It just, and I think it's going to end up being one of those movies that will be timeless, that will, 20 years from now, people will still be talking about Argo because of, you know, not just because of what it made at the box office, but because of the kind of film it was and how well directed it was and the cast that was, you know, involved to make it happen and make it what it was.
Yes, I was very happy to be involved with it, you know, even in a very minor way, but I was just really proud to be associated with it.
What do you consider to be your most challenging film role that you've ever had? Or have you ever had a challenging film role? Because you make everything look so easy when you're in front of the camera. So, you know, have you ever had a challenging film role?
Probably Billy in Creepshow, because she was so different from me. I've never been drunk. And, you know, she was sort of far afield from me, I hope. And so that was, you know, I remember I showed up for rehearsals the first day, and I said to George Romero, I said, look, I'm going to do what I'm going to do if you know, and if it's not right, you better send me home, because I'm not sure. And then also because she was such a larger-than-life character, and that's not what one usually does on screen, you know. You're not usually that big on screen. And so I really put myself in George's hands and just followed his lead. And if he said, you can go bigger, I went bigger. And I thought, okay, well, I hope they know it wasn't me that was doing this. I hope they know George was telling me to do this. But it worked, and she's really fun. And so she's one of my favorites.
Do you think it stretched you as an actress, you know, to play that role that was so different from you? You know, I know a lot of actors and actresses will say, you know, they can say, well, I've had some actors say, well, you know, I taught that character everything they know, kind of thing, you know, and they can't help but put a little bit of themselves into it. But when you have to play something that's so far off the beaten path from who you are personally, and it's hard for you to connect, I mean, I imagine it would be incredibly challenging. You know, not to mention you trying to pull it off so it's believable.
I had some people in mind when I was doing her. I think the hardest part for me was, you know, really not knowing what it's like to be drunk or to be an alcoholic or anything like that, and not wanting to go, you know, make mistakes, because that's a real easy trap to get into, to play drunk and everything. I don't know. What I had to do was get an understanding of her and why she was the way she was. Why was she such a, you know, I don't know what you can say on the radio, but why was she such an outrageous harridan? And why was she an alcoholic, and, you know, and things like that. And once I made those choices, then everything else, at least, because you can't just play someone who's nasty. You know, you have to, because they're not thinking of themselves as nasty. You know, they like themselves, and everything
yeah.
they do has a reason. So once you come up with, you know, what it is that drives them and why they are the way they are, then I think you've got the basis for the character.
For sure. You know, aside from everything you've done along the acting world, in the acting world, you know, you're also a best-selling author. I don't know how many people actually, I never knew that. I always knew you to be an actor. But, I mean, you're an author. And this is probably one of the most interesting, intriguing things I've ever heard about you. And not that you're not, I mean, that's not surprising. It does surprise me. You've done so many different things. But it's what you said about being an author, you know, and I'll quote you. It says, all my life I've been a performer, an actress, a singer, a dancer, even a talk show host. But never in my wildest dreams of my first 50 years did I ever imagine I would write something that other people would read. I still can't quite get over it. I mean, that's a very interesting and profound statement. Personally,
well,
I mean,
it's true. It's true. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I hadn't even been thinking about it. But my third book was just released as a digital book, you know, an e-book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Love Bites is what it's called. And so it's having a whole new resurgence on people's Kindles, which I'm very excited about. And, but, yeah, I didn't, you know, I fell into it because it's a long story, but I'll see if I can make it as short as possible. I had lost my closest friend. She passed away. She died of breast cancer. And I was just looking for something to fill the void left by her passing. And I heard about the real long story is that I met someone who looked just like my friend. And I met her in the same manner I had met my friend. It was on the first day of preschool for my younger children. I had met my girlfriend on the first day of preschool for our, our firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman that I met not only looked just like my girlfriend, who had passed away, but she had the same job, and she was recovering from breast cancer, and my friend had just passed away from breast cancer. So we started talking, and in the course of the conversation, this woman happened to mention a writing class that she had attended that was run by an actress and was peopled primarily with people from my industry, actors. And as soon as she said this, I thought, well, I have to go take that class. And everything that happened subsequently, I've always felt, was coming from my girlfriend who had passed away, who was saying, this is what you're supposed to do next. So I started
mm-hmm.
taking the class, and the next thing you knew, I was writing things, and the next thing I knew, somebody wanted to publish them, and then somebody else wanted to write another book with me, and then I was writing the third one by myself. And I still don't think of myself as an actor, but they've done well, and I'm pleased with them. And I think it was all just my girlfriend somewhere, you know, saying, this is it. This is what you're supposed to do next.
Oh, what an amazing story. That just gives me chills.
That's my story.
That's so sweet. And I mean, gosh, that is more than just like a coincidence of meeting this person who was almost nearly identical to your friend.
It was.
I mean, that
it really was. It was very bizarre. It really was.
Well, once you got through the writing class and you decided to write your first book, how did you decide on what type of book you wanted to write? Because I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be so mind-boggling for me.
Well, my first book came out of the writing class because I realized if you're going to take a writing class, you've got to write. And so I started taking in stories about my career and my, you know, dating Burt Reynolds or working for the mob when I first went to New York, or doing the horror films, you know, being married to John Carpenter. And I was just take these little stories in as my homework assignment. And after about 6 months, the teacher said, you know, you need to submit these to an agent because you've got a memoir here. You've got a book here about, you know, what it's like to be a struggling actress and your career and all of that. So that the first book was a memoir. It's called There Are Worse Things I Could Do, and it's based, I mean, the title comes from the song that I sang as Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one came out, and it started hitting bestseller lists, and I was approached by another author who suggested that we write a horror or science fiction or, you know, something for my horror genre fan base, that we write it together. And so we did. We created a 450-year-old vampire who happens to be a scream queen and the head of the Vampires of Hollywood, which includes Orson Welles and Mary Pickford and Rudolph Valentino, and someone is killing off the A-list Hollywood actors, and they're all her vampire clan. So it's sort of a witty detective romance vampire thriller novel. And then I wrote Love Bites, which is the one that just became available on Amazon as an ebook, which is the sequel to it, but it's a standalone as well. But it sort of follows the 450-year-old vampire scream queen and her girlfriend and the guy that she's falling in love with, and they're just sort of fun. I get to take pot shots at my business, and you know, I got to use friends as characters. I've got Tommy Atkins in there, who you know from The Fog, you know,
mm-hmm.
playing
mm-hmm.
himself, you know, and so I had a really good time with it. I don't know what the next will be. I just started working on something. I don't know. I've been so busy with other things that, you know, I haven't put a lot of thought into the next one. But I enjoy the process. And whether or not I do something else, it remains to be seen. We'll see.
Well, at least we know that you at least have one in the works, you know, even if it's, you know, you're not too far into it. At least we know at some point, hopefully, we'll get another book out there from you, and that would be really cool. So,
thank you.
Now, with everything you have accomplished, is there some aspect of this business that you still would like to delve into?
I think being a disc jockey, being a radio host would just be fantastic because I wouldn't have to put on makeup, you know.
Yeah, there is a lot to be said about not being seen when you're being heard, you know, it's like
I just like to keep going, you know. I've pretty much done it all. I've recorded an album. I've done my club act, my nightclub act, and I love doing voiceover work. It just depends on the project. Something comes along mm-hmm. and it sounds interesting, and that's where I am. I'm on my way next week. I'm doing another video game, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Well, now that you've written a couple of books, do you ever see yourself writing a screenplay or anything like that?
No, I am not a screenwriter. I am not a screenwriter. Not at all. Not at all. I don't understand that form at all. I can tell you when it's good or bad, and I can tell you if the dialogue is believable, but it's not the way my mind works.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not interested in directing. That's the other thing.
Don't want to be on the other side of the camera.
Don't want to be on the other side.
If you were, it would be great, but we would rather see you in front of the camera doing a lot of great things as you've always done over the bulk of your career. So, you know, I think I speak for a lot of fans out there. Well, I have just had such an immense time speaking with you and catching up and talking about all the different things that you've done. I mean, you're so amazing as a person, but just, you know, you've given us a whole career of just lots of, you know, television, film, you name it. We've been able to see you in a lot of ways, and it's been so exciting, and we hope that we will continue to see you for a long time to come.
Thank you very much, Dawn. Nice to talk to you.
It's so nice to speak with you, and we wish you all the best of much continued success. And thank you so much for your time this evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Ah, well, folks, there you have it, Miss Adrienne Barbeau. Oh, wow. Just a wonderful, wonderful talent and just such a humble person. I mean, when you look at her resume and all the things that she's done over the course of her career, it will blow your mind, all the shows that she has been in and all the things that she's done and all the things that she's accomplished. It really will make your head spin because you think, how does one person accomplish so much? But she has done so much, and she's done so much incredibly well. And she is truly, you know, I think an icon in our time. She's, you know, made it big in the movie world. She's been big in the television world. You know, she's done great things in theater. You heard it there. She's an author. She's released an album. I mean, what has she not done is more the question, you know. Maybe I should have asked her that. What have you not done? But in any event, what a great, great, great interview. And I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. Adrienne Barbeau, we want to give a huge thanks and shout out to her for being our special guest this evening. We thoroughly enjoyed her time with us and appreciate her time because she's been so incredibly busy. So it was quite the treat for us indeed, and I hope it was for you as well. That is pretty much going to wrap our show for this evening. We will be back here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern, and we have a documentary filmmaker who is going to be with us. His name is Dan Dobie. And he has created a documentary called Please Subscribe. And it's really interesting. I've actually spoken with Dan before, and I've actually seen the documentary, and it's a great documentary. It documents people, everyday people, who have made it big producing videos on YouTube. And he will talk to us about the whole, you know, YouTube craze and how you can broadcast yourself and how people are really getting creative now. And if you spend any time on YouTube, I mean, you can get lost on YouTube with all the different content that's available. But he really gets some great pointers for how to become your own YouTube video star and how to market yourself. And he's just great to talk with. He's so knowledgeable, and he's done a lot. He's worked with a lot of big stars and on various video shoots and music videos and things of that nature. So his name is Dan Dobie, and he is the brains behind his documentary, Please Subscribe. So we hope that you'll join us tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Eastern right here. And with that, I will say have a great evening all. It's been such a pleasure having you with us and tuning in tonight. Thank you, thank you, thank you so very much. If you're brand new to our program, we hope that this will not be your last time here, that you will be back to visit with us again real soon. And as always, we are very appreciative of our fans and our listeners. And so with that, I will say good night and have a great day tomorrow. And we'll see you right back here tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.